The yisod of the shir, I heard from Hagoyin Rav Avigdor Nevinzon Shlita many, many years ago. I used to go to his shiurim one night a week on Monday nights at 10:30 to 11, and I've heard him discuss this issue a number of times, and the issue really leave it open, so maybe some more people will come. Thank you very much. This, as you can see from the citations that you have in front of you, there's a copy over there, see? I think it should be one of the... Is it? Oh, I'm sorry, over here. What you have here is the following. You have two parshas, Lech Lecha and Vayera. This week is Vayera, as you know. And we have a story that seems to be very similar, that occurred twice. Once, of course, as you can see, in last week's parsha, with reference to Paro, and a similar story with reference to Avimelech and Vayera, this week's parsha. And we're interested in examining the chilukim, of the distinction between these two stories and how these two personalities reacted. I'll start, maybe I'll just quickly read the psukim so you'll get an overall sense of what happened. Looking back to the Torah describes a famine that took place in Eretz Yisrael. Avraham Avinu leaves Eretz Yisrael. You're probably familiar with the Ramban. I assume that the Ramban contends that Avraham Avinu committed a transgression by leaving Eretz Yisrael. Many Rishonim are cholik on the Ramban. Many. I'm not going to discuss that problem right now, but it's a very famous machlokes Rishonim. My father, Zecheinu Livracha, since I'm mentioning it, wanted to be medayik from the pasuk, the first pasuk in the right-hand column, you see? Vayhi rav aretz. So that alone would not suffice for Avraham Avinu to leave Eretz Yisrael. You should have been talking to Hashem Yisbarach, whether Ramban writes. However, the pasuk repeats itself. Vayered Avraham Mitzvah Elohim Shom Ki Chaveg HaRav Aretz. It was very heavy. So my father thought that Rav alone is not a sufficient reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. However, Chaveg HaRav, where it becomes cumbersome and overly oppressive, that would be at Makom LaHakel. Years later, I heard this, Rav Soloveitchik said over the name of the Briskov, this pshat, to defend the position of the Ramban, to my father, Mechavi, the Briskov. Anyway, I continue. Vayi kasher hikri v'lo b'mitzrayim, he tells his wife, Sarai, hine no yadati ki isha yifas marayot. You're a very attractive woman. When the Egyptians see you, what are they going to do? They'll do what, shall we say, people generally, Shalom Aleichem, Dekal Peros, I haven't seen you in a little while.
Sorry, the well was full. It took me a long
time. Now you see why I love this guy. So the Pasuk says that Avraham indicated to his wife, when the Egyptians see you, and what's going to happen, they'll simply lose it, and obviously they'll eliminate me very quickly. So what did he tell her? Imri na'achol siyot, identify yourself as my sister, because then it'll be good for you, be good for me, everyone will be happy. The next pasuk goes on, it's exactly what he did. What he expected to happen, happened. And right away they tell Paro about her, and batukach ha'isha veis Paro. Batukach means she was taken against her wishes, obviously. I'm sorry. Love to say that. He's my Rebbe. Here. Could you give him this chair, please? Thank you. My briefcase, even though it has sperm, so I does not need a chair. Yeah? This chair is better than that chair.
Sorry?
Okay. So she's taken against her wishes to the house of power. And the Torah says in Tezayin, Avram hated Bavura, Avram literally amasses all kinds of riches, and that reminds me of what happened at 4 o'clock this morning. Anyway, this morning I was up at 4 o'clock, and so I happen to be a coffee aficionado, the understatement of the year. And at 4 o'clock I was also very tired, because I went to sleep about 1:30, and I woke up at 4 o'clock. And so I bought in Chutzar, it's a while ago, my wife does not like it. I bought this massive, you know, they have these massive mugs.
Big gold.
What is it called?
Big gold.
A?
Nope.
No. Not a thermos. Not a thermos. And it had on it, I forgot now which team is on it. One of the football teams. I forgot which one it is. I don't remember. Anyway, so it holds about 7 cups of coffee. You know, I have a regular one like this. This one is a massive one. So my wife hit it. She hit it. I know why she hit it, because she doesn't want me to drink that much coffee. But I have to like coffee very much. I'm sorry. I apologize to you for what happened. Here, take this. Oh, you have another one? I don't have one left. You have any more? Thank you. And so I said, at 4 o'clock in the morning, my wife is sleeping, obviously, and I can now, shall we say, go to town. So I went ahead and filled up with many gulps of coffee, many spoons of coffee, and I was about to drink it, and all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, and the entire, this, what do you call it?
Mug,
which is not really a mug, it's a massive kind of mug.
Fish
bucket.
Bucket, no, it's not really a bucket. Okay. All of a sudden, I was looking for my, actually, what I wanted to do, I was looking at a Gemara that bothered me, and I tipped it over, and the whole thing went. It was quite a pool, and quite a puddle, really large puddle, to say the least, and I didn't know how to figure out, what am I supposed to do now? So I started looking for tissues. I couldn't find any tissues in my house or any of that. What do they call that?
Towel
paper or whatever you want to call it. I couldn't find any of that in my house, and so I didn't know what to do. So I quickly ran and found some, what do they call them? Nice napkins, beautiful napkins. I imagine they were probably for when you invite people over, and I took the whole pack, etc. But it wasn't sufficient. Nowhere near sufficient. But still, it was all over the place. And I decided I have to wash the floor. Now, I haven't washed the floor in a little bit, I'll be honest with you, but I noticed that one time there was something called a squeegee item in my house. You know the squeegees? You know what I'm talking about? That's how they do it over here in the Eretz Yisrael. I never understood this for the life of me. I've been here 22 years. Why in heaven's name do they not have a normal mop? Why? Could you explain it to me? Okay, you'll be explaining.
I figured it out. So in America, they have wood floors. Here, they have no wood floors. So here, it's more efficient to just pour water all over the floor and then just push
squeegee.
It out.
Okay.
But you can't do that in America because you have wood floors. So a regular floor.
Anyway, to make a long story short, so I found the squeegee, and I poured water all over the floor. It was coffee all over the place. Poured water all over the floor and started doing my squeegee. I forgot that when I was about to push the water out of the house that the alarm was on. I didn't realize it. I was half asleep. I pushed the water out of the house, all of a sudden the alarm went off, the whole neighborhood, etc., etc. And before I know it, then I said to myself, what am I doing? First, I've got to stop that alarm, and I didn't know the code. Anyway, so that was another problem, and so I stopped pressing the darkie. Anyway, and make a long story short, I finally got the code, but it was in one of my books. I have it about, I've put everything about 28 books, and I don't know what it is. Anyway, I finally got it. Okay, so I think everything's in order. This is already about an hour of this whole business. Finally, I finished this whole process, and I'm doing my squeegee work. I was feeling out the noise that went on a little way. All of a sudden, I hear tiptoeing. I said, who is coming into the house? What's happening? Well, it was my wife tiptoeing down the stairs to see exactly which blankety-blank is doing what over here at this hour in the morning, etc., etc. Okay, make a long story short, that's what you remind me of. back here.
The mug
is now confiscated and apparently hibernating somewhere for the winter. So what did Hashem do? Pasuk Yitzayin. Hashem, when Sarai was taken, abducted, kidnapped, so what does Hashem do? He gives power to Goyim Gedolim, Alvar Sarai Eshes Avram. Now the last two psukim, you see, last three, Vayikar Paro Le'Avram, Mazosa Sisali, what did you do to me? Why don't you tell me it's your wife? Why don't you tell me it's your sister? And I took her as a wife. Here's your wife back. Get out of here. And Paro sends his people to go and accompany Avraham Avinu and his wife out of Mitzrayim. That's the story quoted in last week's Pasha. Now take a look at the one in Vayera, this week's Pasha. Markedly different. But maybe I should only be fair. This is in Perek Chof. Okay, I'll get to it. Avram travels, and guess what? Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Avram El Sarai Ishto Achlosi, he tells her, you are my sister. Immediately Abimelech, of course, gets wind of that. What does he do? Immediately he grabs Sarah. Hashem comes to Abimelech B'chalom Alay and tells him the following. Him chameis ala isha shalakachta, you're going to die. She's a married woman, he bulas ba. Abimelech didn't touch her. He says, what? Hashem, hagoy gam tzadik tarog? You're going to kill a tzadik like me? What did he tell me? It's my sister. She also said it's my brother. So whatever I did besomba bavi ubenikyum kapai. Meaning, I basically am innocent. Hashem said, yes, I also know that you did besomba bavcha Therefore, I made sure nothing happened. And now return the married woman, because he's a Navi, Avram Avinu. He'll daven for you. If you don't return her, I will basically eliminate you. Avimelech gets up in the morning. He calls all the servants, Pasuk Ches, Pasuk Tes. He tells Avram, what did you do? You caused me, my entire nation, to sin. And Avimelech says to Avram, Mara Isa, Ki Yisisa Adar Azeh, why did you do this? Avram said, because I saw there's no Yirah Shamayim over here. You're not God-fearing people. So if I had to go ahead and protect my wife. And she really is my sister, with the Shmigal Taylor, Miss Columbus. I'm not going to get into that right now. Yeah, she really is my sister. And Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayihi Kashi Hirsu Rosi Elokim Beislavi. And when Hashem caused me to wander, I made an agreement with her that this is the chesed you're going to do for me. Namely, wherever I go, I'm going to identify you as what? We're brother and sister. So this way, nothing should happen. Everything should be in order. And the Torah says that Pasuk Yidal now, left-hand column, Avimelech takes son of Vakar, Avon Mishrach, to give to Avram, and he returns Sarah, and then Avimelech tells him, here, Hinei Arti Lefanecha, you can dwell in my country, wherever you like. And Sarah, he plied her with all kinds of things, and Avram davens to Hashem, and Avimelech is healed, etc. So now, you can see there's quite a number of distinctions that I'm going to articulate here between the two stories, the two scenarios that are very similar. Beyond that, let me mention something else. So Rashi, okay, good, if you have a Chumash, I do pointed out correctly. Perek Chavalef, so Rashi has a comment, I think it's on Pasuk Ches. It says over there, let me see, Vayas Avram Mishne Godol, remember that? Later on, the Torah says Avram Avinu made a big party, Biyom Higamel Asitzchak, when Yitzchak was weaned. Why exactly did Avram Avinu make a big party? So Rashi over there on the spot says the following, Shehayu Sham Gdoli Ador. There were Gdoli Ador present at this party. Who were the Gdoli Ador? Shem, Ve'ever, Vadi Melech. Avimelech, the chap here in Parshas Vayera that we just read about. Left-hand column, you got it? So, I understand Shem Ve'Eber. They were Nevi'im. They were the head of Beis Medrash, Yerushalayim, you know that? Shem Ve'Eber, that yeshiva, Yerushalayim. So they can be called Gdoli Ador. Avimelech is the Gdoli Ador. Okay, it's true he had some contact with Avram Avinu, but so did Paro. So why is it Avimelech Avram Avinu invites him to a party and Paro not? How is he more of a Gdoli Ador than Paro? Here's the question. My father Shem was bothered by this kasha. Very bothered by it. That's a legitimate question. So one could say, very simply, a passionate answer. Paro lived where? The Chutzar, to Mitzrayim. Where did Avimelech live? In Gror. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. And automatically, that makes the difference between Paro and Avimelech. What do you say to that? You can see that he doesn't like it. And I don't either. And I'll tell you why this answer is not sufficient, because you'll have to take a look, as I said, carefully in the two sets of psukim, and that's what I want to examine right now. And I'll just list for you, and if you can remember it, it will be kedai to you to remember the distinction between scenario number one and scenario number two, the scenario with Paro and the scenario with Avimelech. Let's start. Whom does Hashem speak with? Does he speak with both Avimelech and Paro, only with one of them?
Just Avimelech.
Only Avimelech. He does not speak with Paro. Now, it could be, one could argue again, based on the fact that there's only Nevuah where? In Eretz Yisrael. Nevuah only exists in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban discussed it in Dvarim, Perek Yudches, and the Kuzari has a similar kind of shita. So with Avimelech, who's in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem speaks. With Paro, who's in Chutzaras, Hashem does not speak. But beyond that, one second. When Paro takes Sarah over here, what does Hashem do? Look in Perek Yudbeis over here, Pasuk Yud Zayin. No. By Naga Hashem is Paro in the Goyim Gedolim. What does that mean? Hashem smites him with all kinds of what? Afflictions without talking to him. When Avimelech takes Sarah, what happens on the left hand column? Perachah Pasuk Yud Ches. Correct. Hashem actually smites him as well, but comes to him and tells him, Alokim al Avimelech Halom Alayla, and tells him, Hin Chameis Ala Isha Shalakachta. At least Avimelech is zochet to some sort of, how shall we say, as you indicated, discussion or conversation with Hashem Yisbarach. Paro is not zochet to that. Beyond that, Avimelech actually, and again, take a look over here, when Hashem comes to him, and Avimelech right away defends himself, what does he say? He says, Hashem Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taro. And he goes further, B'som Levavi V'nikim Kapai. What I did, B'tom Lei, what does it mean, B'tom Lei? Innocently, Nikyom Kapai, my hands are clean. Correct? So Hashem says, yes, I know you did it, B'som Levavcha. What's missing when Hashem speaks to him? The second expression does not appear there. No, it's true, it was Tom Leib, but it was not Dikum Kappa. Rashi right away points that out, the distinction between the two. What does one see clearly? That regarding Paro, he gets makos for what he did. With Avimelech, Hashem speaks to. And even there's justification for some of his tainus. So obviously, Avimelech is a much higher madrega than Paro Melech Mitzrayim. That's what you see very clearly. But beyond that, when Paro calls Avram and asks him, look here in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Ches, right hand column, last two psukim, or last three, I'm sorry. What does he ask him? Why did you say she's my sister? And then I took her as a wife. Here, take your wife and leave. Does Avraham Avinu respond to him? No. There's no response on the part of Avraham Avinu to Paro Melech Mitzrayim. However, look at the other side with Avimelech. Avraham speaks. Avimelech asks Avraham, Mara Isa ki asitza davar hazeh. Pasuk Yud. You see it in the middle? Why'd you do this? And Avraham says to him, because I said, Ein yiras elokim b'makom hazeh. There's no Yirash Shamayim over here, you're going to kill me. And, as I said with the proper lumbus, she is my sister, so I didn't really fool you. Now, it's true that Avimelech, Avraham also does not answer right away. Take a look at the psukim carefully. Look over here, Pasuk Tes, left-hand column. Vayikra Avimelech li Avraham, vayom elo. Me asi solonu mecha tasi lo ki evesa alayvi amamachti chato gedola. What did you do to me? And what did I sin? And you caused me to, and my entire nation to sin. Ma'asim ha'shelo yasi imadi, asisi imadi. Things that should not have been done, that were absolutely unconscionable, you did. Did Avraham Avinu respond? No. Next pasuk. Vayom Avimelech, a second statement of the part of Avimelech. Mora iso ki asisa adabra hazeh. To this Avraham Avinu responds. Why? Why does he not respond to the first comment of Avimelech, and only to the second comment of Avimelech? And the answer is, because the first comment was not a comment. What was it? An attack. He's innocent, Avimelech, and Avraham Avinu is the one who's guilty. Avraham Avinu doesn't feel the need to respond to someone who is a jacuz, someone who accuses him, who attacks him. He sees no reason to respond. However, look at the second time. How does he express himself the second time? Mora isa ki asisa zadav razeh. That's already, the tone is much, describe it more? More pleasant. Thank you. It's a more pleasant kind of tone. Here he doesn't accuse him. He's only trying to understand what is the nature of your behavior. Why did you behave as you did? Mara Isa, why don't you tell me that Sarah is your wife? Unlike, most likely you had some sort of a reason. You don't do things without a reason. So Avraham Avinu, of course, is willing to respond. What does he say? Ki amarti rakat yiras elokim b'mokam hazeh v'haruguni al dar v'al yishti. There's a reason why Avraham Avinu does not answer the first question of Avimelech. Is the same reason why he doesn't answer the chlal Paro. Paro is not interested in, shall we say, receiving any kind of rational type of responses. Paro just accuses him and screams at Avraham, Mazal sasisole, lama marta achosihi. And even without waiting for an answer from Avraham, what does he tell me? Tell him, get out of here. Because Paro essentially has no interest in having any kind of dialogue with Avraham Avinu. Undoubtedly, Avraham had what to say to Paro as well. But if Paro speaks in such a fashion, Avraham decided, I have no interest in talking to him. So that's another distinction between who and whom, between Paro and Avimelech. Avimelech is willing to listen to Avraham Avinu's explanation. That's why the Torah has two different statements on the part of Avimelech. The first time was jacuz, attack, assault. Avraham did not respond to that. Paro, that's all it was assault. There's no response. And the second time Avimelech speaks to Avraham, he does respond, and then the conversation begins. Another example of a distinction between Avimelech and Paro. Paro, does he see any need to, shall we say, offer pitsuyim? How do you translate pitsuyim? After what happened, to sort of ply Avraham Avinu with compensation of sorts, correct? Now does he not provide him a compensation? What does he do? He's ejected from the stadium. I don't mean the stadium, but I meant the ejected from the scene. Mashenkin Avimelech, what does he do? Look at the bottom of the left-hand column. Vayikach Avimelech, what does he do? He takes stone of Bokar, Vavadim Mishrachos. What is he trying to do? Engage in what we call appeasement, reconciliation, compensation, as you described it, correct? So, Avimelech, relative to Paro, can perhaps be considered to be one of the Gedolei Hador. You hear what I'm saying? This is the distinction between Paro and Avimelech. You see the distinction? Fairly obvious distinction between the two. And that's why he's invited to the Mishnah Gadol that Avraham actually did, B'yom Higamel as Yitzhak, when Yitzhak actually was weak. And Paro clearly is not of that Madrega, and therefore Avraham does not see any need to go ahead and invite him. However, at the end of the day, even after all the, shall we say, praises that we said for Avimelech, what does Avraham Avinu tell Avimelech regarding the question? Why doesn't Avimelech reveal, why didn't he tell Avimelech that Sarah is his wife? So Avraham Avinu has the following line, which is a very famous line, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ki Amarti, Rak and Yiras Elokim Ba'amokam Azeh, Varaguni Advar Ishti. A person can be the Gadol Hador, you can act the Tomlev, you can be a person who's very cultured, you can give me 1,000 pieces of silver, you can tell me if you wish I can have an apartment in where the Eretz Plishtim. That's what you offered him over here, correct? But together with all the above, you can also kill me. You know why you can kill me? Because something is missing. What's missing?
Yerushalayim.
Rak and Yiras Elokim b'amokam hazeh. And what does that mean? Avraham Avinu is up against a person who is, how shall we call him, very legal. Avimelech is a very legal king. He doesn't stop take Sarah. Rashi quotes, if you recall, that he asked all the Chamarim and the Gamalim, he asked the donkey drivers and the camel drivers, are we talking about a woman who's an Eshes Ish? If they would have told him that Sarah is the wife of Avraham, unquestionably he would have put together his Supreme Court and they would have found a way to justify his getting rid of Sarah and marrying her, getting rid of Avraham rather, and marrying Sarah. And even though, as I said, one could argue that Avimelech is in a higher Madrega than Paro, at the end of the day, a person who doesn't have Yiras Shamayim, one who's lacking Yiras Elokim, no holds barred. He can do whatever he wants. He'll find technical and legal ways of justifying his behavior. Are you aware of such people in the world? We're surrounded by them. Most politicians are of that ilk. Would you not say so? We just had a presidential election. The only shaila that I had regarding the presidential election, did you vote? I think I asked you already. You voted. Did you vote?
Canada.
You what?
I'm from Canada.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I forgot. Sorry.
Lucky him.
What was the only distinction between the two presidential candidates?
Who's worse?
Correct.
Who's worse?
Which one was worse? If you want to put it in Balabatish terms, one can be called the Nevela, one is the Taifa. How do I translate those terms? Literally translated, Nevela is someone that there's no head to Shlita. You learn Chulon, I imagine. That Shlita was not done. And Taifa is, of course, there are Yitzchak Taifas, the Gemara says. There are 18, how shall we call them, situations where a person is not going to live out the year, even though today doctors can do surgery and take care of most of the Taifas, whatever the case is. The only question is, which one's worse? This one is a pathological liar. This one's a raving lunatic. I'll go on. I don't want to go on. He became president, and now, of course, he's going to become very presidential, and he's going to, shall we say, put his house in order, and everything will be hunky-dory. You know that. You're not aware of that? Overnight, he's going to become a malach, tzaddik yisod elom, and on and on. I just want to go further. Not only does Avraham have this thinking, but also Yitzchak, his son. If you remember, many years later, you recall, okay, we need a chumash. You're right, Noach, you're always right. If you have a chumash, you can just give it a few moments to maybe pass it out a little bit. In Perek Avav, he knows me well.
I didn't bring the chumash.
But say that. You have Perek Avav? Vayi Rav Aretz, this is in Pasha Toldos. Another Rav, another famine. And guess who wants to go down and leave Eretz Yisrael? Yitzchak. By the way, there's a famous Ran. I'll just tell you that Ragah. This Ran, I am absolutely disqualified from. The Ran, Perek Avav in Tasha Soldiers, page 59 here in the Red Chumash Pagination. Anyway, so the Ran is cholik on the Ramban. The Ramban said he committed a sin when he left Eretz Yisrael. So the Ran has the following kasha.
Did the Ramban say 3 cents?
What?
Did the Ramban say 3 cents?
Ramban
said that on the 3 cents.
Yes, that's already needs another lot of discussion. One was the issue of, as you indicated, what was the issue one? Did you know them? Vatanea, putting Sarah in danger. Number two, leaving her to Yisrael. Number three, later on he said, Vatanea, Sarah, Vatimech, and Ponel. Sarah afflicted Hagar. She committed a sin. And Abraham, by permitting her to do so, also committed a sin. Three sins that Ramban had. These are a lot of careful treatment to make statements about Abraham and Sarah. Remain, it's not so simple, and even for Ramban to make them, and this needs a lot of discussion. There are many people taking these Rambans, and as a result, they literally permit themselves free license to go ahead and criticize the Abbas and Imos and the general personalities in Tanakh based on the Ramban. If he can do it, I can also do it. Many have this kind of license, which is absolutely unconscionable. But okay, this needs a separate. If you remind me, I will address this issue. Also, not now, I can't do it all at the same time. But anyway, I'm back here. In Perek Chavav, so the Ramban is difficult, says the Ram, because here there's another famine that occurred, and who wants to go down? Yitzchak wants to leave Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ram, if Yitzchak wanted to leave Eretz Yisrael, obviously he did not know what the Ramban knew. Namely, the Ramban says it was a chet. So obviously Yitzchak did not know it was a chet. If he didn't know it was a chet, how did the Ramban know it was a chet? Hear that kasha?
Wow.
The Ram is the kasha, the Ramban, pili ploy. Not a simple kasha. No? Are you? Yeah. But I'm back here. The reason why I mention it, because Yitzchak is not Somech on whom? On Avimelech. By the way, who are we talking about over here? Gerar. This takes place in Gerar, and guess whom the personality is involved here? Avimelech. Correct? You know what I'm referring to? Look at the Sukkim, the Perek Chavav. You'll see, correct? Many years later, correct, he comes to his wife Rivka to Gerar, and again, he also fools Avimelech and tells him, Rivka is my sister. Avimelech asks him why, so what does he answer? Pass the test over there. Ki amarti, what did you say she was your sister? What's he going to tell? Risk Columbus. Because I thought that what? I'm going to die. You'll kill me. Means they could be all cultured and nice and dandy and the Galador, but at the end of the day, the Galador could also kill him. As cultured as they are. I don't know if you're aware. I assume you are. You probably are aware, undoubtedly. Unfortunately, that the Germans, the Nazis, were incredibly cultured. I saw you to describe how, with one finger, they would play Chopin, Tchaikovsky, and with the other finger, they would press the button for the gas chambers. Highly cultured, no problem. Highly educated, highly aristocratic. So the fact that someone is cultured really doesn't mean much. One can be cultured, highly cultured, and yet one can be incredibly cruel. And just to show you a bit further, since we have the Chumash ready, and since you indicated that I like to quote things, in Perek Chavav, look in Pasuk Tezayin, maybe we'll start a little bit before that. Yitzchak, as you know, after his encounter with Avimelech, Avimelech protects him, and then Yitzchak begins to prosper. Now take a look, starting Pasuk Yigimel. Vayigdal ha'ish, one of the most famous psukim in Tanakh. Vayigdal ha'ish becomes very successful. Vayelech haloch v'gadel ad ki gadal mo'od. What a pasuk. There's one word that occurs so many times that's very obvious. The name of the word gadol means he's incredibly prosperous, incredibly successful. Continuing. Vayilo mitnei tzon mitnei vokav v'avudah rabah v'yikanu atop v'shtev. What does that lead to very quickly?
Jealousy.
Jealousy, correct. And if you will, the roots of anti-Semitism are found right over here. And guess what they do? They decide to stuff up all the wells that Abdei Aviv, that the servants of his father dug in the days of Abraham Avinu, and they stuffed all the wells. Those who live in Eretz Yisrael know that sometimes other people build homes here, do a lot of the building, and they stuff all the pipes. Just to be mesameach us. You know what I'm referring to? You can figure it out. Not too complicated. Anyway, by the way, the Germans also argued that we took advantage of Nazi Germany. We became very successful in Nazi Germany. I seem to be aware of it. And we were actually in the higher echelons of society over there. Highest echelons of society in Germany. And the Germans accused us of we became wealthy on their cheshbon. How do you translate that into English? What?
Their account.
Their account, correct. You're taking on panasa. You own all the banks of the world. You run the world's economy. And therefore, clearly you have to leave town, they have to throw you out, etc., etc. This is exactly what the Torah describes over here. And what does Avimelech tell Yitzchak over there? Pasuk Tezayin. These are the roots of anti-Semitism that come to a large extent from kinah, jealousy, sinah, leads to hatred, and that's what the Torah describes over here, really the early origins of anti-Semitism. There's a number of very good tracts in anti-Semitism that you probably read. Dekala Peres. I think you probably read some of these, did you not? Could I read about anti-Semitism, the roots of it, and I have a chaver, he's a classmate of mine. He's an ex. Name is Telushkin, Joe Telushkin. So Joe Telushkin recently wrote, actually, very beautiful, one of the four biographies of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zechad Midracha, Zechad Midracha, Lava Shalom. So he wrote one of the four books that I actually read all four. Joe Telushkin is an Ilui. He's a grandson. His grandfather's name is Dolly Ador, Anisim Telushkin, the Chatzal Gidracha, and who wrote a Sefer Mikvos. He wrote a number of Svarim actually. Anyway, he's also a genius, Joe Telushkin. You know him? It's good. He wrote a very fascinating biographical. You read it? The Lubavitcher Rebbe? You read all the others also? It's good to read all four of them. Who are the other three? There's Steinsaltz. What? He wrote one also? Who are the other two that wrote? I don't remember anymore. Steinsaltz, I know, I read his as well. And there were two others. Who did?
Alexander wrote the Rebbe, the Messiah, and the scandal of Orthodoxy.
Ah, okay, that's not.
It doesn't count.
Not what I'm referring to. Anyway, okay, my point in all of this is really that when you compare Paro to Avimelech, there's quite a distinction between the two. You see it in the Pesukim, and that's why Rashi quotes from Chazal. That he's one of the Dolei Ador, but again, I'm just showing you this issue, and I want to just develop it a bit further, if you don't mind. Chazal say, if a person tells you Chacham Bagoyim Tami, he tells you that there's wisdom in the nations of the world. There's no question there's wisdom in the nations of the world. Anyone who knows anything about, shall we say, the secular world knows there's tremendous wisdom. I'm talking about science, and in many areas, the nations of the world have really developed all kinds of technology that really is of the first order, and there's no question. And so Chacham Bagoyim Tami. However, if they tell you Torah Bagoyim Al Tami, it's a medrash. I think it's an Eicha Rabba, if I remember correctly. Perhaps you recall that they tell you that the Torah among the Goyim, don't believe it. What does that mean? It means the following: that even the Chachma that exists among the non-Jewish, in the non-Jewish world, to a large extent, it often is very abstract. Often it's chachma that doesn't become Torah. Often it's chachma that's not translated into ethical behavior. Often it's chachma that unfortunately is not, shall we say, connected to morality and the like. And that's really something which is absolutely amazing. There's one of my favorite books written by the sociologist Hannah Arendt called Eichmann in Jerusalem. I don't know if you remember the Eichmann trials. You probably don't, a little bit before your time. But anyway, she wrote a book called Hannah Arendt, Eichmann in Jerusalem. And essentially she defends Eichmann. On the grounds, I couldn't defend Eichmann. He was a Nazi, a murderer, killed many, many thousands of Jews. How could you defend him? So she answered the following. Because how do you expect him to behave otherwise? He was simply behaving based on the context where he lived. Contextual ethics is called today. Ethics that's based on context. What determines my behavior? How do I behave? Depends on the context. Correct? If the context that I live in dictates a certain kind of behavior, I follow that behavior. So whom did they follow? The Fuhrer. Correct? They followed the Hitler, Yimach Shemai B'Zichro, and they were simply behaving as people should behave. And therefore, there's no way you could possibly indict Eichmann. How could you hold him guilty? You hear the argument? This is a very strong argument in a very powerful book called Eichmann and Jerusalem. So what is the response to that? The response, of course, is that our system of ethics is not based on, shall we say, relativistic ethics or contextual ethics, depending on context example. People today in hospitals, unfortunately, in secular hospitals, will often tell you something called quality of life. What does quality of life mean? If you have an older person, let's say in his 70s, and he has an issue, and you have a younger person, and let's say even if the older person is relatively stable health-wise and the like, and the younger person is not so stable, what's the point of dealing with the elderly person? Let him die. We don't need him anymore. We don't have enough beds anyway. What kind of quality of life does he have? It's a very common thing that you hear today. Are you not aware of it? I'm sure you are aware of it. His quality of life argument is an argument which is, from a halachic standpoint, is absolutely spurious. It is untenable, unconscionable. We believe in an absolute system of ethics and morality, one that's relevant, l'dorei doros. So her argument, Eichmann in Jerusalem, that he was acting simply because his context demanded he acted that way, is absolutely unacceptable. Ethics is ethics is ethics, and it's relevant now, shall we say, 100 years from now, 2,000 years from now. That's our system of ethics, a totally different system. So when we say that there's no Torah b'agoyim, that's what we mean. It means that Chochmah has no, often doesn't have an impact on their personality, on their ethical behavior, on their morality. And this is one of the problems that we have, actually, with society in general. They say over, actually, one of the great personalities in Rome, he was one of the Chachmei Rome, one of the academicians in Rome. And so once, actually, he went ahead and wrote an essay about anger. And not the essay that he wrote about anger, and one of his maidservants apparently accidentally spilled some ink on that essay that he wrote about anger, against anger, how anger is such a terrible midah. And he went ahead and on the spot, he killed her. So the question is, he just wrote an essay on anger. She spilled some ink on that essay, and right away you kill her? So of course the answer is, Tvei Dinim. What I lecture about is one thing, but how I behave is something else. He was a brisker.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. Dialectic. So this is not an uncommon phenomena, unfortunately and tragically, that we see actually in the world at large. And I believe this is exactly what the Torah actually is trying to hint at over here, especially in the language of Rakin Yiras Elokim B'Amokam Hazeh. You don't have Yiras Shamayim. You could be the greatest chacham in the world, you could be a genius, you could be have intellectual acuity of Einstein, but if you have no Yiras Shamayim, you're in trouble. To a large extent, one of the reasons why we study Torah, and probably the main reason why we study Torah, is in order to develop this Yiras Shamayim quotient. It's not so easily acquirable. You have it by nature, because you're such a beautiful person. But not everyone is zochet to your beautiful nature. So you may have it even on a natural kind of basis, just developing it further until you become, shall we say, top of the line. But people like me are not as lucky as you. We have to learn a lot of Torah and discipline ourselves tremendously and try to acquire Yiras Shamayim to the extent that we can in order to, shall we say, hopefully, as a result of Yiras Shamayim, we're able to behave in the ideal kind of fashion. I'm very, you probably are, I assume, familiar with it. There's a number of fine works in English that I recommend often. One of them is A Tzaddik in Our Time, of Ari Levine. I probably have read that book over 100 times. You know what I'm referring to? Yeah, you guys familiar with that?
Yep.
There's a great tzaddik in Yerushalayim named Ari Levine. He has a grandson here, Benji, who's an outstanding person, also a big tzaddik. I read that book just to get Yiras Shamayim. And I need a lot of it. So that's why I read it over 100 times. There's another book I suggest to you, written by Rav Moshe Lichtman, Shlita, An Angel Among Men, in English. It's about Rav Kook Zatzal. Another book that I've read many, many times. Both books describe two powerful personalities, but the greatness of these personalities were not so much in their monumental knowledge of Torah, which was way beyond anything I could even possibly appreciate. Each one was a colossus. Their greatness primarily lies in their unbelievable character, beautiful character, Allah, in line with my Rebbe over here. Beautiful character, pristine character. Midos that were nifla, sensitivity to other people's issues, and ethical and moral behavior that were nothing short of being mind-boggling. One of the things that I was very amazed, and I didn't see this really directly, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal had a doctor who took care of him. My brother, Zecher Lebracha, happened to be his accountant, his doctor. You know who the doctor is, from Queens. He used to come to Rav Soloveitchik's shiur. I actually sat right in front of him. And every Tuesday night in Maria, the Rav said a shiur in Maria, Manhattan, Yiddish, to several hundred people, and this doctor sat behind him. The doctor once published in Jewish Action magazine the human side of Rav Soloveitchik. I never saw that before, many, many years ago. You can get it in the Jewish Action magazine, the OU magazine. There's an organization called the OU. They have to do with kashrus in the United States. There's something called kashrus. Eating kosher food. We're supposed to do that. He's the only Amora mentioned in Shas, in Baba Kama. You know what I'm talking about? Rabaram. He mentions Rabaram. Only time in Shas is in Baba Kama. He's the only Amora mentioned in Shas. Anyway, there's something called kashrus. There's something called Judaism. We eat kosher food. OU is involved with that, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, so they have a magazine called Jewish Action. So this doctor published an article about Rav Soloveitchik, about his human aspects of him, in terms of, number one, the amount of tzedakah he gave to people, the chesed that he did. Wow. I just thought he was a intellectual colossus. Did not know about his human side. Gedolei Yisrael also had a human side, and a very strong human side, and that's what Torah does. Torah transforms a person. The Gemara says the Torah, chilasak minas chasadim, besovak minas chasadim. It begins with chesed, it ends with chesed. That's what Torah has to do. It has to completely transform us. We have to metamorphose as a result of the Torah. Become different individuals. The Torah has to change a person. Torah, hello, kod dvarai ka'esh nu mashem. Gemara brachas. You didn't get that far. Torah is compared to what? The fire. Fire can scour. Fire can serve as a purging agent, as a cleansing agent, as a cathartic agent. And that's what Torah has to do to us. And that's what the Torah is speaking about over here when it compares Parah to Avimelech. And even with Avimelech, who's one of the Gedolei Hador, as Rashi quotes, Rak and Yiras Elokim b'Makom Hazeh. That's what we have to try to develop. Yiras Hashem and Yiras Shamayim and beautiful Midos. That's the whole idea of what Torah is all about. And that's why I like to read stories about Gedolei Yisrael. Because Gedolei Yisrael have these remarkable qualities that only came about through Limud HaTorah. There's no other way one can change one's life without learning Torah and learning it, as I said, Be'yu and Gadol, that can transform a person totally. That's what happens. And that's Baruch Hashem, what Be'ez Hashem is Baruch, all you who are going to become Talmidei Chacham, that's for sure. Al Zeh Nishom Safek. Halavai, we should produce here one of the Gedolei Hador. That would be even more remarkable. And it can happen. It's not something which is out of the reach of every single individual sitting in this room. A lot has to do with cheshek. Cheshek meaning?
Desire.
You know, a streetcar named Desire, Lahavdil. So, desire is critical. If you have a desire, Rav Soloveitchik used to say in Yiddish, Avila is best of the Akena. Someone who wants is better than someone who can. And all of you can, and hopefully, Mitz Hashem, you also want. And you'll develop that Yer Shamayim, become Tamil Chacham, Muflogim, Ezra Hashem. Plug yourself, be nana to all of you, Yitz Hashem, collectively, individually, hopefully, with the car.
Thank you very much, Hashem.
Yes. Shabbat to you.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.